Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, February 4th, 2014, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Just give you a quick reminder that Mercury is going retrograde on Thursday. I know we're all happy to hear about that. And it will be until February 28th. So if you need to learn more about that, look on our website under Current Astrological Events, and there's a link there on our main page. We are gathering the next soul group to go with us in our Crystal Quest to Arkansas, which will be starting on Pleiadian lineup May 17 through 23. And if you have the required star markings on your natal or progress chart of 25, 26, 27 degrees of Taurus or Scorpio, Capricorn or Cancer, Aquarius or Leo, then you are part of the soul group having the rites of passage to participate. And we only have a few spots left, so if you feel the call of the crystals, please send an email to crystals at Starseed Hotline for more information. And in case you hadn't heard, I've just released a new CD of my music, so check the main page of our website for the link, and you can hear some samples. It's about 22 songs of inspiration, and you can read more about that on the site. Our special guest this evening is Carolyn Gervais, author of I Dreamed I Was Human, Awakening from the Illusion. I love that title. Her foundation for writing the book comes from having been a student of metaphysical spirituality for over 35 years. She's an ordained minister in spiritual psychology and a certified hypnotherapist. She has a master's degree in holistic nutrition and was also a professional singer for over 20 years. So we have that in common, Carolyn. She has frequently been published in the Sedona Journal of Emergence magazine and on numerous websites focused on metaphysical spirituality. I Dreamed I Was Human gives examples of how to break free from a system that compounds the perception that we are separate from everything and everyone, including ourselves. And you can visit her websites, which are AwakeningYou, that's AwakeningYOU.com, and IDreamedIWasHuman.com. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to Starseeds. And we'd like to thank Fiona for hosting our switchboard this evening. And you're welcome to call in with comments or questions. The number to dial is 917-889-8292. And remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. If you like our show, we'd sure appreciate your support by clicking follow on our show page. Our main site is starseedhotline.com, and within our vault is a wealth of starseed information. We also have a forum for starseeds at starseedhotline.ning.com, and we'd like to thank Rose and Tammy for their dedication to the forum. You can find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go or download them right from our show page archives here. And if you want to contact us privately, our toll-free number is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions for people and pets are also available with Tammy. And if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. And you can also get a Stage 2 reading to interpret those solar return energies. Just make sure you book that about 2 months ahead because we do have a waiting list. So now I would like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Good evening, Anastasia and Lavendar.
Good evening, ladies.
Lavendar here. And Anastasia, I sent you something over about the snow. I hope that everybody's ready to hear this story because I really thought it was something that we should air tonight. So go ahead.
Well, yes, thank you. We're all getting some pretty tough weather, but before we talk about that, I want to thank our Starseed listeners. Specific thanks to Andrea and Ivan and Tammy and Carol. Thanks so much for writing. So many of you are so great about sending me links and keeping me abuzz of what's going on out there, so I want to thank you especially. And, you know, we're having some winter weather here in the middle part of the country. We've got ice outside my front door that's stacking up on the tree limbs and so forth, and it's been a really interesting year. And they say that behind this winter storm, another surge of frigid air from the Arctic is forecast for the later in the week. And they say that temperatures are expected to drop to more than 40 degrees below normal in the high plains by the end of this week. And they say that the southwestern U.S. will be the only area of the country that's going to be spared from this Arctic blast. Wow. It is really something. And in line with that, you know, along with the ice, we've had snow. And there has been stories circulating over the Internet that the snow, at least much of it in certain parts of the country, has been fake snow. And this is what Lavendar was referring to at the start of the show here, start of the news. They say that the fake snow all over the United States, some people are saying, is frozen poison organisms that are alive. I'll tell you the story as we get along, but other people are claiming that it's nanoparticles. Now, you can YouTube this. Check out their search engine for fake snow, and you're going to find all kinds of videos about it. But here's an email from one of our listeners who said that I have had confirmations from friends in Calgary and in this area that the snow is not normal. I shovel the snow off our mid-roof regularly as it has previously turned into ice and backed up with water melt. When shoveling last week, I thought to myself at that time that the snow had a different consistency. I was also perplexed that there was no ice on the roof. There's always lots of ice from while the heat escapes through the roof of the house, but we used heat on balls of snow and directly into snow that had come down on its own. Excuse me, the snow did not melt. It just became a ball with a plastic smell and a brown-black residue. We used a lighter, match, and then a blowtorch. The blowtorch just created a slow dissolving substance, no condensation, no water. I have had bonfires outdoors in previous years, and the heat from the fires would melt the snow. But for 2 years, I've been watching the spring melt, except it was not what it was. Used to be as a normal melt. There's hardly any runoff, and there is no evaporation, and the snow just disappears. It doesn't leave water. So this is one story out of many that are circulating. A lot of reports from Canada and other parts of the United States, as well as a recent report in your area, Ariel, that the snow in Atlanta was not melting. There was a video on YouTube that was supposed to have demonstrated that, but when I went to check it out, the video had been taken down. And instead, the website that I was checking with had substituted another video for somebody in Michigan who did a very good video on trying to melt the snow. A man went outside of his back door, scooped up some snow, and then tried to melt it. Very interesting demonstration. So this has caught my attention. I will tell our Starseed listeners that the snow outside of my front door melts, but that doesn't mean it's happening everywhere. So if you're getting some snow, you might want to try that experiment just to see if the snow in your area is melting or if it turns brown and black. Have you checked your snow, Ariel?
Well, I hadn't heard any of these or seen any of these videos when the snow was
still on the
ground. So, no, I didn't go out. I looked at it from inside and thought it was really pretty.
Sure.
It did melt. It took about 4 days,
and it drew people's attention.
Yeah, I thought it was hanging around longer than usual because I was even surprised that it stuck on the roads because it's been so warm here.
Well, that's what people really. I think that's what caught people's attention was the very slow melting and all of the traffic trouble that they had down there. People just wonder, what's up with this? Why isn't it melting? So I guess that's probably what sparked some of these tests. People are alert and wondered what in the heck was going on. So any Starseed listeners out there that have had this experience, I would love to hear from you. Love to have your story, documentation, whatever, about this. I think we really need to, well, let's just watch. Let's just see what's going on. So that's that. And as far as it being poison organisms that are alive, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of a natural skeptic unless I have a lab, unless I have a microscope, unless I have some evidence that there are microorganisms that are unusual, that are not normally in water. I mean, I would want some scientific study on that. But nevertheless, that's what people are saying. But I just think we ought to stay open and just see what's up. So everybody stay alert.
I thought that
people just get carried away, really. They just get carried away. So, but I do want to hear from those of you that have had this experience. Please email me, Anastasia@starseedhotline.com. So we have a lot to talk about, and I need to move along, but we have an approaching coronal mass ejection. NOAA forecasters estimate that there is a 25% chance of polar geomagnetic storms today, maybe tomorrow, when the CME is expected to sideswipe Earth's magnetic field. They say that the glancing impact will probably spark auroras around the Arctic Circle. As usual, nothing odd there. And they say that there is an 80% chance of M flares and a 50% chance of X flares before midnight tonight. And they say the source of that would be sunspot AR1967, which we've kind of been tracking. Nothing too unusual about that. But as far as fireballs go, there have still been quite a few. I've got some stories to share with you since last Tuesday. They said that there was a bright flash in Finland. Video cam recorders caught it, and there were just a huge, enormous bright light in the sky, just filled the lens, just a huge flash. And people do think that that might be a fireball that came down and landed in Finland, and everybody's on the scout for it because, you know, bits of meteorites are worth something. So people are wondering and looking for possibly a fallen meteorite in Finland because the bright flash really got attention. And there was a huge meteor fireball seen across 8 Mexican states, along with the American Meteorological Society has reported hundreds of fireballs, 4 separate fireballs that were seen over the United States on just a few days ago, the 28th of January. They said that they got over 100 reports of a bright fireball seen from the Midwestern states. They call it Midwestern, but actually it was Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, West Virginia, Kentucky, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. I don't consider that to be Western states. But anyway, people from those states have reported an extremely large, bright, bluish-green ball of light followed by a bright white tail. They say that the sightings clustered near the Ohio and Kentucky border, heading from the east almost due west. So a lot of people saw that. And also, in the same vein, there has been a first meeting of an international group that's been tasked with reacting to asteroids. Next week in Germany, representative of mankind's spacefaring nations will get together to begin coordinating efforts to figure out how to identify and prevent really big space rocks from smashing into us like the meteor that hit Russia last year. So they're working on it. It's getting everybody's attention, what's going on up there. And in the area of Earth changes, I want to talk about some of the animal passings or deaths that have been recorded in the last week. They found a number of dead albatrosses in New Zealand. They said that they've never seen anything like this before, a large number. I don't know how many. But 1,122 or 1,122 dead turtles have washed ashore in India this month. They don't know what has caused that. And there have been more than 400 dead dolphins on the northern Peru coast. So, you know, there's signs and indications of distress with the ocean as I continue to report of these mass animal die-offs going on the planet. And 19 more volcanoes in Indonesia have been raised to an alert level status. The government raised the status on another 19 volcanoes in Indonesia, which is the second highest category, called the alert level, because of the Mount Sinabung eruption in North Sumatra that killed 16 people on Saturday. Now, I had been taught Mount Sinabung for the last couple of months, and it finally did erupt. And even though they evacuated the villages, people got impatient and wanted to go back. And authorities couldn't keep them home. They snuck back. They wanted to get back home. And then the eruption happened that took 16 lives there. So people get restless and they think it's safe to go home. Anyway, it wasn't. And so besides the 19 new additions they've added to alert, they've had 3 volcanoes on high alert since last year. So, I mean, this is a country that's got 21 volcanoes, that are problematic, let's say. That's a small country with all those volcanoes that are giving them problems. Wow. And there was so much snow in Iran that they had to cut power to nearly 500,000 homes. They say that heavy snow in northern Iran has left about 500,000 homes without power, and some towns and villages are entirely cut off. They are saying these winter storms are the worst in 50 years, with 2 meters of snow falling in some areas since Sunday. So that's a big deal. And in Ecuador, we're not done talking about volcanoes, by the way. Ecuador's volcano called Tunguska exploded to life this weekend. It blasted 3 times in an hour and spewed ash 5 miles into the air. And there has been an alert level raised on a volcano in East Java. And that, I guess that's it about volcanoes. But you see, there's just happening all over. This has got to be cooling our atmosphere. You get that much ash into the air, it's proven to have caused cooling. So we are definitely in some type of climatic change caused by a number of things, but certainly the volcanoes are contributing to that. And speaking of climate, Nevada farmers have begun to turn to prayer because of the drought that's gripping the western states here in the country, in the United States. You know, I've been talking about this for some time. I think it was late last year, maybe early this year, I brought up to our Starseed listeners about the falling water levels in the nation's aquifers, the underground aquifers that hold all of the water. And they have really been diminishing. The water content has been way down. Well, this is not about aquifers tonight, but this is about groundwater and also about ice pack, snow melt. We really have a terrible problem in the western U.S. So people are beginning to pray. They're desperate. This comes from The Guardian, by the way, out of the U.K., and it says that religious leaders and farmers held multi-faith prayer service in Reno, Nevada, to ask the divine for help in easing drought conditions. And also religious leaders in Utah. The Mormon Church has called a multi-faith service to try to get some help from above, because they said they can't get any help from politicians. So they're asking the public to join in prayer and fasting for snow and rain for livestock and crops, because they are so concerned about what could happen if we don't get some rain. All right, so that's all about the weather, and that's a lot, and I haven't even touched it. There is so much going on the planet, but I want to talk to you about loud booms. We've been talking about that ongoing for some time, but now in Hyde Park, Chicago, residents have been really mystified by mysterious noises and vibrations that have been affecting their neighborhood. They said that as the weather grew colder, they started experiencing trembling and vibrations and buzzings. They said that it sounded like a locomotive, sometimes like a giant fan, sometimes like something grinding. They felt like it was a change in air pressure. It was all kinds of descriptions. But they said that their windows shook or that there was a low-level hum. They said that this lasted less than 5 minutes, and it happens off and on without any other outside noises. And they said that the phenomenon appears to come from deep underground. So there again is more rumbling and no known cause. We just don't know what that's coming from. And this is a wild story, you guys. You talk about deep snow. Well, in Clovis, New Mexico, guess what they're buried in? 8 feet of it. It's tumbleweeds. Tumbleweeds. A windstorm last Sunday brought tons of tumbleweed through the town of Clovis, New Mexico. And when the storm subsided, the city was covered with tumbleweeds, some of it, some places over 8 feet high. They've had to dig out paths for cars. Some people can't get out of their houses. Crews are putting in 10-hour days clearing the tumbleweeds, and they say they expect to do this for weeks.
Oh, my.
Isn't that something? 8 foot of tumbleweeds. I think I'd rather have tumbleweeds than snow, but maybe not. You know, they're pretty scratchy. Trying to get through those can be pretty sticky. But that's wild. There were photographs on the Internet that showed tumbleweeds all the way up to some people's roofs. So that's just wild.
With drought, I mean, if there's a spark, isn't that pretty flammable stuff?
Absolutely, Ariel. I just love the way you're so intelligent. You really are fun to talk to on this show. You bring up some great points. And that's right. And, you know, we've had so many wildfires. In fact, they said that in California, I think there were 400 and some wildfires this month compared to 9 wildfires this time last year.
Wow.
Everything is so dry. The West is a tinderbox. And there is an example of it. You caught that. That's excellent, but it is a problem. And, of course, tumbleweeds occur when there's more drought. So, in fact, people have been posting signs along roadways in some parts of the Southwest with references to politicians, of course, people aren't happy because it's a water fight. Everybody's fighting over water and who gets water and how it's dispersed and all. But there were references to don't make the Southwest a dust bowl. So in addition to the fact that we're not getting enough rain or moisture, there's politicking going on and people fighting over water and who gets it and on and on. But the fact remains is that when the Dust Bowl hit the Midwest, that is exactly what happened. The ground cracked and dried and everything dried up and blew away. And so when we see this many tumbleweeds, there's yet another indicator. In fact, this is not really in my news tonight, but I'm going to share this. The Joshua trees in the desert of California, in the Palm Desert area, Palm Springs, Palm Desert, that part of the country, the Joshua trees are demonstrating enormous blossoms, just huge. And biologists are saying that that's more than likely a response from the trees to propagate themselves, to grow bigger seeds, to try to ensure their own survival because the drought's so bad, it's even affects some desert animals. Isn't that something? But I want to talk to you about this, you guys. There's a story. It came from the Daily Mail. But archaeologists have come up with some information that they say that proves the Bible is inaccurate. Archaeologists from the University of Tel Aviv found that camels were not domesticated in Israel until the 9th century B.C. And they're claiming that this shows that biblical text was compiled long after the events described in the Bible, and it challenges the Bible as a historical document. Researchers say that camels are mentioned in Bible stories, and that because these camels were not domesticated in Israel until centuries and centuries after people were supposed to have ridden them, they say, therefore, in their conclusion, that the Bible was compiled long after the events described. And so, therefore, people should begin to question it as a historical document. So that's interesting. I'm really surprised they printed that, but that's what they did. And I want to end tonight's story with a lovely little piece about children. There has been newly published research that has proven, or it says it proves, that children are born with intuitions of their immortality, that all of us had visions of life before conception as children. They did a study that analyzed answers given by two groups of children, and they used urban kids and rural kids, and they wanted to see if there was any difference between urban and rural children in this, but it found that youngsters intuitively believe that their own existence happened before they were born. That children naturally believe that they existed before their bodies came into being. And so the results, they're saying, suggest that despite the fact that most scientists say that the mind is a product of the brain, which us and our listeners know that is not the case, they say that this is evidence that we possess an intuitive sense of ourselves that is distinct from our bodies. And they say that very early on it seems that we do develop a feeling that we existed before our bodies came into being. And, of course, from there, it's an easy leap to believe that we will continue to exist after our bodies fall away. And so that's a beautiful thought. And I know that as a child, I certainly had many memories and many connections. And I work with starseed parents and their children, and I'm telling you, these children are awesome, and they know so much. And it's unfortunate that the world kind of gets a hold of them. And tonight's guest is a beautiful topic. But it's really important to remember that we are immortal, divine consciousness, and we just borrow these bodies for a little while for, shall we say, an adventure. We're on an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're really on one now. This world's getting really interesting, but we do need to remember that we are not this. We're just this for a little while. It's a suit that we're wearing, temporary. If we, when we get down, we really need to look at the kids. We really need to connect with children because there's the innocence and the beauty and the truth that many of us have really forgotten. So it's good to be alive. It's a good time to be alive. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more from our listeners, I'm going to turn it over to you, Arielle. I'm looking forward to the show.
Okay, well, thank you, Anastasia, for the Starseed News. And right now, I am going to bring Carolyn on the air. Hello, Carolyn. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi there.
Thank you.
And Lavendar, are you set?
I'm here, and I'm ready.
Right.
Well, Carolyn, okay. I told you when I emailed you that I had built me a fire. It snowed here, and I curled up with your book, and it was just really inspiring for me to be able to read your book with a wonderful fire looking out at the snow. And I haven't finished it yet, but I will probably this next snow that comes. I'm just so excited that you, I know that you had to move on a dime. I only gave you, 24 hours to be on our
That's
show.
That's okay.
You are. And so thank you for moving on a dime and being with us tonight.
Well, thank you.
This book, I Dreamed I Was Human, I would just like to read a paragraph from your introduction because so many people can relate to this.
Okay.
For the first 5 years of my life, I was looking at the world through what seemed like a filter of thin white gauze, trying to understand what I was seeing and what it all meant. It was like I was dropped off here by mistake. Something was missing that I couldn't put into words, and I had no idea where to look for it. I felt so out of place and lost, and I knew I didn't want to be here, but how was I going to find my way back to this elusive something that I longed for? There had to be a way, and I would find it somehow. I think so many of us could have written that paragraph. That is so familiar to so many people that I have talked to, saying, you know, I came here, but I think it was a mistake. I hear that a lot. Oh, and then the first chapter is entitled, The Day I Found Out the Truth About Adults. So I wanted to know if you could tell us a little bit about that first chapter and what you remembered about being young and having experiences with adults as you came into your own.
Okay. I used to spend, I have an identical twin sister. Now, she is not like me, but we have the same kind of personality, but the way we see the world is totally different. But anyway, we used to spend a lot of time with our grandparents when we were little at their house, and I remember one night we were sitting outside on the porch like we did a lot of times on a summer night, looking up in the sky, and my grandpa would point out all of the stars and all what the stars meant and what was in the stars and explain everything to us. And it always brought up the deeper questions in me, like, why are we here? So I asked him, I said, Grandpa, why are we here? And why did God even make us? And he said, oh, honey, I don't know the answer to that. He says, nobody knows the answer to that. God doesn't want us to know the answer to that. And I was absolutely shocked because I thought once you grow up, you have the answers to everything. And so that really made me afraid, because I wondered how I was going to learn how to live in this world if the adults couldn't answer my questions. So I was bound and determined that I was going to ask God my questions, drive him crazy until he answered them. And so I was determined, especially that night, that I was going to find the answers to my questions. But I remember as a child from three to 5 years old, I was seeing the world through that white gauzy haze. And I didn't know I was seeing the world through the white gauzy haze until at five it just disappeared. And then I knew, that's why I remember that I was seeing the world through a white gauzy haze. And I remember wondering, how did I get here? What happened? It was like, it seemed like one second I wasn't here and the next second I was. And as I looked out around me at the world and the people in my family at my grandparents' house, it seemed so chaotic. Everything seemed so confusing and loud. And I just thought, oh my goodness, what is this? And I really had no sense of relationships except that I knew I liked to be around my mother and I liked to be around my twin sister. Those were the only two people I cared about the most in my life. They were the ones that had the most meaning to me. And I just thought, well, all I can do is just study what I see and try to figure out what it all means so that I have some way of living in this world and staying here, because I didn't know how I was going to stay here. It wasn't exactly a place I wanted to be, but yet I found myself here. So
let me ask you about your twin.
Mm-hmm.
Does she have the same metaphysical belief systems that you have?
No. Mm-mm. No, she does not.
Yeah.
So she's metaphysical, but not in the same way.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that, you know, you have different soul records, and you
right.
have different things to experience from your soul records. That
mm-hmm.
just makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
A lot of sense. So I know one of the chapters that I really got behind when I read it was chapter 3, is your perception of God holding you hostage.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Would you please expand on that chapter?
Well, us humans have a tendency, because of what society teaches us and what our parents teach us, when our parents teach us about God or we go to church as children, then we're taught a certain way of believing what God is supposed to be. And it gets us trapped in the perception that God is supposed to be like us. Because it says in the Bible, we are created in God's image. Well, so people take that to mean that that God has the same feelings and emotions and hang-ups that we humans do, at least some of them. That's what people think. And so in this way, we humanize God, and we each do it in our own separate way. Nobody's perception of God is the same, so we each make up our version of what we want God to be. And in doing that, we are constantly serving a false God, and we are constantly thinking that whatever our version is, my version as a child, I was taught that God punishes us if we do something that he doesn't like. And that, even as a child, I thought, well, how can that be? Because my mother told us that God loves you more than anything. God loves all of us more than anything or anyone could ever love you. But if you do something wrong or bad, he's going to punish you. And I thought, why would God, this being that loves us so much, want to punish us like our parents punish us? So I thought, well, how can I trust a God like that? Because I got enough punishment from my parents. I didn't need it from God, too. So I was really depressed about that. But this is what we do. And so if our perception of God is a jealous God or a vengeful God, then we fear what that perception of God is going to do to us. Are we going to be punished if we do something wrong? And it makes us live a very superficial life, because we're afraid of everything we do, that God's going to see it as wrong. And this is how I see religion, formal religion. We are taught that if we go to church every week, then we will go to heaven. And a lot of religions believe that if you don't go to church, then you may not go to heaven. Well, heaven is a perception. That's what I've realized, that because we all have our perception of what heaven is supposed to look like. And what is heaven? It's just to me, it's just the spiritual realm of energy. And so when we leave this earth, our perception of what that heaven is in our minds or in through our egos, that's where we go. Maybe we don't stay in that particular heaven or how we see heaven, but that's where we go until we wake up on that level more, and then we probably move around. But this is what we do with perception. We make up a God that we think, that we believe can exist. And so when we have a punishing God, then we're always going to be afraid that we're going to be punished. There's somebody in my family that is so afraid to do anything that she wants to do because she wonders if God wants her to do it. And because she's afraid if she does it and God doesn't want her to do it, then she's going to be suffer somehow. And this is what that chapter is all about, realizing that God is not a jealous God. God is not an angry God. God is not a vengeful God. There is no such thing. God is an energy force that creates, and we are part of that energy force. We are an aspect of that energy force.
I totally agree. You know, that we just don't have much truth on the planet about you know, the cosmic laws that were to us on the planet.
Right.
Yeah. The other chapter that I really liked is when you said, can positive thinking be a house of cards? I really love that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
I especially loved what you said about Course of Miracles. I totally agree with you. Would you expand on that, please?
Which one, Course of Miracles?
Well, either one, House
okay.
of Cards. Course.
Okay.
That whole chapter, positive thinking, yes.
Okay. Well, positive thinking has been what I call misused or misinterpreted. Positive thinking is way more than what most people think it is. It's not just sitting down every day or throughout your day saying positive things to yourself. It's not just visualizing something you want to manifest and expect it to manifest because you spend a lot of time visualizing it. There's way more to it than that. And people have a tendency to think, I've known people that have the tendency to think that all they have to do is when they go out throughout their day that they act positive, talk positive, and take positive actions, whatever that is, even if they don't believe in what they're doing. And this is what I learned when I was studying positive thinking many years ago, when I got into it, that all I had to do is visualize and say affirmations, and that'd be it. And so I did that. And every time I did it, it would make my stomach hurt. And I wondered why. And I realized why my stomach hurt is because I didn't believe what I was telling my mind to believe. I didn't believe it myself. And I didn't believe the affirmations could really do anything. So I realized that after a long time of doing this, nothing was really happening that great and fantastic as far as manifesting in my life. So I sat down and wondered, well, why? Why is this happening? And I realized that whatever we want to manifest in life has to be felt with emotion and feeling, excitement, whatever we want to manifest it. I mean, like, live it in our minds with the emotions and everything. See it. And then if you want to do affirmations, fine. If you can believe the affirmations that you say to yourself, that's great. I personally do not use affirmations because I feel like I'm just trying to tell my mind to do something that it can't believe because I need more than that. But what sabotages us with positive thinking is our underlying beliefs, perceptions, fears, experiences that have made us afraid or were painful. All of these things that are underneath that we push down because we don't want to face them, we don't want to deal with them because they're too painful, those are going to affect even what you think you're doing as positive thinking. You can think positive all you want, and you may manifest something, but how long are you going to be able to maintain something you've manifested if your underlying feelings are self-sabotaging? So we have to work on an inner level to resolve and heal some of these self-sabotaging ideas and beliefs about ourselves and about life, too, so that when we do think positive, we can feel excited about it. And when we do visualize something, we can feel excited about it. And in that way, we can manifest it. But it takes effort. It takes action, going out and taking action towards your goal, to what you want to manifest, like finding a job. Let's say you want to do some kind of work. Well, you need to educate yourself on that kind of work, whether it means taking classes, going out to meet people in that field of work, talking to people, and putting some time and effort into the direction you want to go each day, physically, mentally, and emotionally. And that's how I see. And to me, that's true positive thinking.
Okay, great. What is your perception of our truth? Why is perception our truth and our bondage?
Because perception, think about it. We came into this world with free will. Whatever way you people think they were created, whatever their creator is, whatever created them, that doesn't matter. The fact is that we all came in with a built-in free will. And we were given that free will in order to choose and to create what we wanted to experience in human form. So everybody thinks that everything in manifestation was created by God. Well, to me, we are the essence of that creative force that was given free will to create. So everything we create does not last. It will go away someday. It will decay. It will die. It will fall apart. Anything in physical manifestation will go away, where everything that God creates, which is us, or our soul, or essence, life itself, can't die. It can't go away. It's forever. So what we have done is we have used our free will to create a world we live in, our bodies, our experiences, through our choices, and those experiences make us have certain beliefs. Those beliefs make us have certain concepts, and then those concepts become perception. Perception is not real. It's just a perception. It's coming through our human mind. Now there are experiences where we are experiencing on much deeper levels who we really are. And so my idea of getting through this life and what I've learned through my years of study and meditation and contemplation is that we have to see what's underneath the perception, and that what's underneath the beliefs and the perception and the fears is the real us. And when we can tap into that, then we can heal the fears and the perceptions, and the fears and the beliefs, so that we can let them go and see them for what they really are. And this is part of positive thinking, to see all of our experiences as stepping stones into a more aware us. And in that way, if we see all of our experiences, even the ones that scared us to death, if we can see all of our experiences that way and know that it's okay, that it's normal to experience suffering and challenges and love and joy, and that there's no judgment on which is good or bad. They just are. Our soul gives us what we need to grow. And our soul doesn't judge it as bad or suffering or painful. It's just an experience that we, through our free will and our perceptions, judge as good or bad, suffering or joy. And this is how we overcome that.
So I noticed that you have written about two things that I just really love. One is experiencing parallel lives, and the other is called reincarnation with a twist. Let's start with reincarnation with a twist.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you probably agree with this, that time does not exist outside this realm of existence as far as manifestation goes, as far as planets and all that. As far as we know, that time was created by mankind. Think about it. Cavemen, you know, they created time through daylight and darkness. When it got to be dark and the sun came up the next morning, then they called that a day, or they called that, you know, a full cycle. You go to sleep when it's dark and you wake up when it's light. But because there is no time outside this existence, that everything really is happening all at the same time. We are multidimensional beings that live in a multitude of forms through the universe, through the cosmos, and all of those forms have a piece of us in them. But I see everyone as an aspect of each other. I mean, when God created soul, that a God created, fragmented into many, many forms and many, and went many places. And so everyone in human forms are all really one energy, but we have individualized that even more by saying, okay, I'm me, you're you. But so we have even fragmented even more with our own particular aspect of God. And so we have other selves that are in other alternate realities or parallel realms. And the reason why we don't experience them always, or if at all, some people never experience them, is because if we could experience those other aspects of us, life would be so confusing, because we would get mixed up which was us and which was them, and what our problems are and their problems. We'd be trying to solve their problems and our problems all at the same time. So it's good that we can only tap into those other frequencies once in a while when we have something to offer each other that is very much needed.
Yes, I agree. The other title that got my attention was called The Ways Our Ego Commits Murder.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Course in Miracles talks about the way the ego commits murder. And the ego, again, is the false aspect of us. It's the human aspect that has a personality. That is what I call the ego. The ego isn't necessarily something that's egotistical. The ego is what allows us to live in this world and allows us to relate to each other and to talk to each other. Because if we weren't talking through our ego, nobody would probably even understand us, what we were saying or how we're saying it. So the ego can trick us very easily, and it does a lot when we get ourselves in a situation where things start going down the hill or are causing us suffering or pain. Then we start blaming other people. The ego starts blaming other people for their problems, whether it's their parents or their siblings or their spouse or their partner or whatever. We have a tendency to blame other people. And the reason we do that is because we have been taught that, number one, through society, through our parents, through other humans, and we thought that's what we were supposed to do. But when we start waking up, we have to take responsibility for what we do and what we don't do. We have to take responsibility for our actions, the words we say, the things we do to each other. We have to take responsibility for that. And until then, every relationship is merely a special relationship, what I call a special relationship. And a special relationship means that every relationship has conditions that we put on it. For instance, I will love you if you do this for me. I will love you as long as you act this way or you give me this. And this, I think, is why a lot of people get married. They get married because they think that this person is going to give them all the things that they want. And it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So until we can look at ourselves and say, okay, what part am I playing in this relationship that's causing it to be dysfunctional? What part am I playing that is making it dysfunctional? It's like it takes two to make a relationship dysfunctional. So we each have to look at ourselves and take responsibility for the part we play. And when we can do that, then we can talk about it. And sometimes only one person is willing to do that or even knows how to do it. And when that's the case, there's really not a whole lot that can be done except to accept the person the way they are. And if that isn't something you are willing to do, then it's probably best to move on.
Yeah, I noticed you had a chapter that says finding the fine balance between needing, wanting, and having.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. We confuse need with having, especially in our country, because people have so much, more than a lot of other countries. Even on when our economy is not so great, we still have more than a lot of people in other countries have. And we're spoiled in that way. And what happens is the more we have, the more we think we need, because we confuse having with needing. We assume that if I don't have something and I want it, then I need it. And that's not true. We have to get to the point in our evolution to where we only take what we need. And if we want more, then realize that we're doing it out of being entertaining ourselves or not really needing it, but just wanting it. And that's when having and needing become about wanting. We want what we don't have because we think what we don't have, we need. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'd like to go now and talk a little about alternate realities. What does alternate reality look like, and how do you know if you have experienced one?
Okay. Well, you surely know when you have experienced one, but there's probably multitude of ways to experience an alternate reality or a parallel realm. And everybody is unique in that way. Now, I can only go by my experiences, but I have talked to people that have had similar experiences. Do you want me to tell you one of my experiences?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. When I was getting a divorce from my first husband many, many years ago, I moved into this apartment, a one-story old apartment complex with my son. And I remember my friend, I remember hearing this coffee pot percolating every morning in my kitchen coming from this certain wall, which I'll call the north wall. And one of my friends came over one morning, and we were talking and stuff, and she came into the kitchen because we were going to get something to eat or something, and she heard the coffee pot percolating through the wall, and she said, "What's that sound?" And I said, "Oh, that's my neighbor in the end apartment. I hear her coffee pot every morning through the wall." And she says, "In the end apartment?" And I said, yeah. She says, "Well, how can that be?" She says, "You live in the end apartment." I said, "No, I don't. I talk to this lady all the time. I mean, I see her all the time. I see her coming home." And I said, "She is probably about 50, and she has long, dark, straight hair, and her clothes are real plain and kind of, you know, she wears slacks and really plain blouses or shirts, you know. And I see her, and I never see anybody go into her apartment or come out of her apartment but her, and she seems very sad. She seems very lonely, like she doesn't want anybody to look at her or talk to her or anything, you know. And the other day I said I was coming home when she was coming home, and we were opening up our front doors at the same time, and I said to her, "Hello," you know, I said, "Hi." And she looked at me, not wanting to, because she acted like I was bothering her, you know, and she looked at me out of the corner of her eye, and she said, "Hi," and then went into her apartment. And I thought, well, that was strange, but I wanted to be a friend to her because I didn't want her to be lonely. And so what I remembered from that experience was that, and I wondered why her apartment was like this, everybody's apartment, their front door opened on the right side of their apartment. Everybody in the whole complex, every apartment was the same. And her door, her front door, opened on the left side of her apartment, like looking into a mirror, parallel to me. And I wondered why hers is the only door that opens on the left side. But I just dismissed it and thought, oh, well, they must have done it for a reason. And so my friend said, "Well, you need to go outside. You need to go look." And I said, "You're scaring me now. You think I'm crazy, don't you?" And she says, no, I know you're weird, and that's why I stick around you, because you entertain me." But she says, "Just go out and look. I want you to go look." And I said, "Okay, I'll go look, just to prove to you you're wrong and to prove to me you're wrong." So I went out and I looked, and sure enough, I was in the end apartment, and that apartment was no longer there.
Yeah, wow. Now, is that the only time you had something like that happen?
No, I had some other times too.
Yeah, wow.
And they were a little different, and that's why in my book I describe them as, for me, a parallel life is a little different than an alternate reality.
Okay.
In the way they look.
Yeah. It made me think of that show called Fringe.
Fringe?
That was on for so many years.
Uh-huh.
It's about an alternate reality. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
I never saw that, so.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
So, what is the difference between real and the dream of being human?
Real is anything that can't die or fade away or rot or decay. That is what is not, that is illusion. I'm sorry, did I say real?
Yeah.
That is illusion. Anything that fades away and dies is illusion. Real is anything that can't die or go away. It can change form, but it can't die. Like our souls, like our life force energy. It never dies.
And why do we defend our separateness?
Because of our egos, because we have been taught that we are individuals and that nobody thinks like us, nobody feels like we do, especially as young people, and that we have to look out for ourselves because nobody else is going to look out for us, and God made us individuals. We even see ourselves as separate from the creative force, the creator that created us. We feel we're separate from that too, and that is so far from the truth. We are one with that. We just are stuck in this human aspect, and because everything appears to be separate from us, around us, we believe that we are separate from everything and everyone, even what we call God. And we're not. It's an illusion. That's the illusion. That's the dream. We are dreaming that we are separate from each other and everything else in the universe, even God. And that's what I call the illusion, and that's what I call real. Now, that doesn't mean we can't experience real in the human form, but when we do, then we are experiencing it within ourselves, and nobody else can experience it with us. That's real. And we can tell them our experience, but that's not going to be real to them. That's just going to become either a belief or something entertaining or a perception that they use until they experience their own absolute experiences within themselves.
The thing that I loved about reading your book is the way you choose your words, your sentences, and it gives you pictures. As I read along, I see pictures.
Mm-hmm. That's
and that's
right.
Always the tell sign for me of is someone that's able to bring a concept forward, and then you see it in picture form.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I Dream I Was Human. You have two websites, www.idreamiwashuman.com.
Dreamed. With a
dreamed, I'm sorry, I dreamed I was human.com and www.awakeningyou.com.
Yeah.
So I encourage our listeners to pick up your book. It's really written well, and it has deep thought and deep energies to where you can actually start tracking yourself as you read. You close your eyes, and it gives you so much insight to what you're reading. So at this time, I would like to turn this over to Arielle, my co-host, and she has the switchboard. And so, Carolyn, it's just been my pleasure talking with you today, but more of a pleasure reading this book. So
thank
we'll
you,
talk
Cindy.
Later. Back to
okay.
you, Arielle.
Well, thank you so much. That was just so fascinating. And we do have some callers on the switchboard, and if anyone has a comment or a question for Carolyn, you'll need to press 1 so we know you want to come on the air. And while we're waiting for that, as I was listening, I had a thought, because I don't know if this happens to other people, but I'd like to get your take on this. As over a lifetime, you know, we have a lot of dreams at night and, you know, taking on all kinds of stories and experiences. And then at some point, after time passes, I can myself personally flash on on a scene, and I can no longer say, oh, that was a dream that I had long time ago, or did it really happen, you know, in the third dimension? Places that, you know, that I have seen, I can't remember if it was real or a dream. And at some point, I had the thought that the past is no more real than a dream that you had at night, because you can't. I mean, has that happened to you, where you kind of don't remember? Did I really experience that in waking third dimension, or was that just a dream recall? What
yes.
do you think about that?
Well, I think you were experiencing another aspect of you, or another dimension where you live too. Maybe in another form, another. When you start thinking, okay, did I really experience this or did I not experience this, then you know that is an alternate reality that you're feeling, because you actually merged with that for a while. Because I've done the same thing in my life, where I couldn't remember whether I experienced something in this life or did I experience it in another life. Actually, I have done that. I knew I didn't experience it in a dream. I felt I had experienced it here. But yet I realized later on that no, I was so connected to it that I couldn't separate the two. Does that help?
Yeah, the past and the dream world that has passed,
mm-hmm.
are
there is
almost,
no separation. No, there is no separation between past, present, and future.
Right.
It's a myth. It's just we're tuning into a different frequency when we see what we're calling the future, or what we're calling the past. We're just tuning into that frequency in that time frame and experiencing it all at the same time you're experiencing everything else. We all do that.
Finish your sentence.
I don't remember what it
was.
I don't
remember it now.
No. They go in and out, you know.
Yeah. And what about your involvement, if any, in, let's say, possibly a dream state or in meditation, mm-hmm. going to the fifth dimension and having interaction with galactic beings?
Mm-hmm.
What of your experience is connected in that way?
Well, I have experienced that myself. But again, I feel that everything we experience as energy or a galactic being is still an aspect of us. Somehow it still is an aspect of us, because everything is one anyway. We are the ones, our mind, our perceptions, our needs and our wants, have a tendency to take energy and separate it from every other aspect of energy and give a face to it, so that we can experience an experience that's going to increase our awareness of who we are. And
I just got a flash of an example of what you're saying. I pictured a mirrored disco ball,
uh-huh.
that's, you know, spinning, and each of the little square, you know, mirror faces on this disco ball is unaware that it's really part of this whole collective, and the only reflection that you see is that part of the room that's directly in front of you and that you're reflecting, and it becomes all that is. Yet at the same time, all of the other billions and billions of souls are another face on this big disco ball, and always inseparable.
Yes.
But
that's
with,
fantastic. That's beautiful. That's a great analogy.
All you see is just that little piece that you reflect in the mirror.
Because that's wherever we focus, we're just focusing on that certain thing at that moment, then that becomes the reality at the moment where we're focused. Totally focused.
And the perceptions, the understandings, the learnings, all of that comes into each of these facets actually passes through us into the disco ball and becomes part of that collective. So all of us are out there gathering, experiencing, whether, you know, real or illusion, that's all getting thrown into the pot. So we all have a access point to all that is, if we would just turn around and look behind us, so to speak, you know, because inside that, to continue the analogy, inside that disco ball, everything is being held, like the Akashic Records.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
It's energy that can become anything through focus, thought, feeling, emotion. That's how I've had a similar experience where I've experienced what I call the sphere of creation, and it looks like a round thing, but I'm inside of it, and when I've been there, it's like I am one with every aspect of life and what we would call non-life, because within this sphere is nothing but energy that can manifest into anything. And I, too, am part of that energy. I am one with that energy, and I am one with every consciousness, every aspect of life, everywhere, anywhere. But like you're saying with the ball with the little pieces of mirror broken up, I realized when I'm there, I can think a thought, and like it's like I'm pulling myself out of the not physically but mentally pulling my individually out and saying, oh, there you are, you know, and I know I'll pop right back into the oneness as soon as I let that go. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so in that sphere, I realized that we are all one. When we're not in these human bodies, or when we're not focusing in these human bodies, because we really are not in these human bodies. We're just focusing here, so that makes us believe we are here, which is necessary to learn what we want to learn from this experience of earthly existence. So what I realized in this sphere is that we, individually, through us all being in contact with each other within that sphere, which you might call mass consciousness, we as individuals have to do our part so the whole can be pure and go back home. Go back home to the oneness that we all are, which is there, but we don't know it's there. We're still on that we're still one in that ball. It's just we don't see that when we're awake and moving around in human form.
So, I mean, as far as the starseed population on the planet, you know, we agreed to leave that realm and come here and put on a human suit, complete with all of the you know, the discomfort of clothing that and if you think of the human body as just the, as you said, it's the vehicle. We came here with a good reason for doing that, and it is, as you said, to bring experiences, to help teach, to bust through illusions, and help to raise the consciousness on the planet. And I think it's really, really helpful to always keep in mind that this human suit, it's just the clothing that we had to adopt to walk around in the third dimension.
Right.
And, yeah, it's not easy.
This is what we all agreed, that this is there's certain rules. You have to be in a human form. You have to go through feeling like you're completely deaf, blind, and dumb because you don't know where you came from or why you're here, you know. So that's part of the game that we all agreed to.
And it bears repeating that, number one, the soul that inhabits these human suits knew the job was dangerous when you took it, and knew that we'd come in and get amnesia, knew that we'd be wading through the mud of the thickness of the third dimension, but we all felt that there was enough at stake to take this on, and we wouldn't be here if somewhere there wasn't confidence that we could handle it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And always having the resource of the collective consciousness, all of the creator source,
mm-hmm.
we're never separate from that, and it really can help to connect, to kind of feed us what we need to continue
right.
with this assignment.
Mm-hmm. And when I think that people that I miss, I don't know how other people feel, but I miss where I came from. I miss the other side of where I was before I came into human form. I miss that, and I always have my whole life. And so sometimes this world can become very overwhelming, especially for people that know what that other home feels like. And so what I do when this world can seem overwhelming is I just sit down and I talk to the creative force and say, lift me out of this. Let me see the truth. Just lift me out. And I go into a meditative state, and within 5 minutes I feel this is all lifted. It's lifted up off of me. And I feel at peace again. And so that might be something that everybody might want to try. It works for me. But mm-hmm. everybody has their own way, so everybody has to find their way, but that's one way.
Well, it's a giant well that
mm-hmm.
never runs dry, that we can, when we get really, really thirsty, it's just right there. I mean, it's just through the veil, and yes, in meditation, in even in a sleeping state,
mm-hmm.
we
yes.
can go there, and we're never really gone. It's just
no,
it's,
we aren't.
It's perception,
yeah.
perception.
That's the illusion
that we're not home, and a lot of star seeds. I mean, I get email after email, and you know, I just want to go home.
Yeah.
So understand that you're never really away from home.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's just what we've been trained to do.
Yes. Yes. And I actually do remember agreeing at another time, another place, another realm, another planet, I don't know. I just remember this happened in my 20s when I left where I was from. I agreed to come here. I agreed. I volunteered. And that's putting it in human physical terms, but it was equivalent to that. I remember. And I think many people here on the planet have volunteered to come here and help out in their own way. And I think that's great.
Right, and volunteering was the first step, and then that you had to have qualifications, because
yeah.
just raising your hand isn't enough. You had to raise your hand and have the ability, the training, the experience, the frequency, the mm-hmm. evolution, whatever you want to call it. You had to be qualified to come. And because we all know that the job is dangerous, and
yes.
we have to believe and understand that we do have tools, and so many of us forget that, you know, access to resources, access to source, access to collective energies that can, you know, help us get down the road. So we're never really alone. We're never really without any means, but we've been trained to perceive limitations and you know, and bow to them. And that's really where the, where we, I go, what was I thinking, you know, raising my hand for this? And,
I've
truly,
said that
yeah, I mean, truly, you wouldn't be here if anywhere down the line there was, you know, evidence that you couldn't handle it. They'd never let you come here.
And I know that. I know that.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people know that, but sometimes you feel like you're not in that space at the moment.
Right.
And so you have to find your way back. And I do it through meditation. And, you know, I want everybody to know, too, and I'm sure you've told a lot of your listeners the same things, and that is through meditation, dreams, contemplation, daydreaming, experiences can happen in any way imaginable. Experience what I call life-giving experiences, or some people might call them spiritual experiences. They can happen in any way that we are programmed to tune into, because we all have different wiring. And so we, according to our awareness level, and how aware we are, determines how these life-giving experiences come to us. So they're going to be different for different people. And that doesn't mean everybody hasn't experienced, or that doesn't mean that everyone hasn't experienced a parallel life, because everyone has. They just don't recognize it as that. I have to say, every parallel or alternate reality I've experienced, if somebody hadn't been there to tell me that it wasn't there really happening, I would have thought that really happened, that I would have probably seen that apartment forever. But somebody was there to tell me no, and the same with the other experiences that I remember that I had, that I've had of parallel lives and alternate realities. There was somebody there to point out to me, well, that didn't really happen. But yet it did,
right.
You see. There's no difference.
Uh-huh. And did you still hear the coffee percolator?
No.
After that?
No.
So,
I didn't.
I mean, that your friend's perception of, you know, 3D reality overrode and kind of burst that bubble,
right,
where you had access
to
that other reality, and then she came out and basically instilled you with her concept that, you know, that's not really there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
but that's okay.
Well, I think
I was meant to happen that way, because I was a student of metaphysics and spirituality since I was 17. So I think it was a message for me. There are other aspects of you. There are other realities, and there's nothing wrong with experiencing them, because I knew that through my studies. But I think it was kind of, I call them a waking up gift. Does that make sense?
Well, sure.
I call these experiences a waking up gift.
And it also demonstrated that when you buy into someone else's belief system, it can stop the flow.
Right. Yes, it can.
Yep. So I had another thing that I wanted to talk about, and it just went away.
Well, maybe one more time,
I'm going to ask the callers if anyone has a question or comment. go ahead and press 1, but they seem to be completely enthralled with what you're saying, so we'll just continue.
Okay.
Let's talk about the children, because as you said, you know, when you first come in, you're still so much connected to another dimension,
mm-hmm.
and then slowly, you know, people impose other limits and beliefs and things that the light that you used to see starts getting dimmer and dimmer, and then you're totally absorbed into the third dimension. What do you think we can do to help children to stay in touch with that?
Well, I would like to think that parents get involved with that, because what I did with my son, since he was 3 years old, when he was 3 years old, I started talking to him in metaphysical ways, in, you know, using words that he could understand. And he was learning a lesson constantly about something every day. For instance, he had this tendency when he was like 13, to borrow his friend's clothes and not give them back. And I told him, you can't do that. That's wrong. That's stealing. You don't do that. And I said, what's going to happen? So I tried to use everything as a learning experience for him. I said, so, you know, what's going to happen if you think that's right and you keep doing that? I said, you're going to lose something that you value very much one day, and you're going to wonder why that happened. And sure enough, he lost this gold-plated necklace that I had gotten him. It was back when they were wearing the gold chains, you know, around the neck. And he lost it. He laid it on the beach in a towel. And when he came back, it was gone. And I said, that's what I was trying to tell you. And he said, you were right, Mom. You were right. And so I think parents need to listen to kids' experiences and not say, no, that really didn't happen. Try to keep that alive, because that is their real self, their real honest-to-goodness self. Those experiences are showing them who they are, and parents should not discourage that. They should let them talk about them. And I talked about all these things with my son, and he remembered. He tells me to this day he remembers everything I taught him. He says, you thought I wasn't listening, because he was pretending he wasn't, but he says, I was. I heard it all. So they do hear you, and I think the children that are coming in today, they need to know who they are as these spiritual beings. They need to know that's who they really are in human form. And that needs to be kept alive, and their parents need to help them keep that alive so that they maintain that. Now, for me, I never even went to my parents, my dad once, because every night when I'd go to bed when I was little, I'd be really scared, because every time I closed my eyes, I was floating in all these colors, like tons of colors. Everywhere. I was just floating in them, and I didn't know what it was, and it scared me. And so I asked my dad, I told my dad, Dad, he thought I was just getting out of bed and making excuses, and I said, no, Dad, I'm scared because I see all these colors, and I don't know what they are. And he said, oh, you're just making that up. Get in bed, you know. That's not going to keep you from going to sleep. And so what I learned to do is to just think of something else that wasn't not me floating in the colors, because I didn't understand what they were at the time. So I never really forgot all my experiences, even though my parents didn't encourage them. So it depends on the kid.
Right. Right. So it doesn't look like we're going to have any questions or anything. So Is there anything that you would like to add before we wrap it up?
I would like to add that what we as humans have to do when we are in these human forms and the ego starts telling us what to do and not do, we have to get in tune with the real us. That means looking at every aspect of ourself, all of our hang-ups, our habits, our fears, our perceptions that are painful or that get us into trouble or make life harder, and look at all of these and say, okay, do I still need this? What purpose does this serve for me? Or does it just bring me harm? And look at all those and know that these are just things. They're not real. They are what we have formed in our mind to be real, and they can be changed to different perceptions as we look inside ourselves and question them and ask what validity they have for us. And as we look at them as stepping stones to the real us, then it's easier to let them go. There is no judgment. There is no need to hate yourself or be angry at yourself or to feel ashamed or anything for any experience you've had, because they were stepping stones to a more aware you, and this keeps going on throughout life. And so as seeing them like that, it's easier to let them go.
That's so true. It's so true. And I just remembered what I was going to mention a few minutes ago. For Starseeds, we volunteered, we qualified, we came here, we put on the human suit. And when you feel overwhelmed, I have just recently talked on this subject to one of my clients. Go outside into a garden, into a forest, into a natural setting, and let everything else go non-existent for that moment, and you will remember this is why we came here, because there is so much beauty. Earth was created to be a paradise, and it is we who have turned it into the battlefield and and the struggle. So just walk out of the house and get really quiet with nature. And I mean, I do this every day, ritualistically, when I walk and I just drink it all in and say, yes, look at the beauty. And this is why we raised our hands, to get a chance to come and experience this. But we end up missing it because we get swept away by, you know, the way we think it all is in the third dimension. So that's
right.
Advice to people who start going into overwhelm. Nature is an infinite source of energy and connects you to that source.
Right. Yes, it is. Ooh. Everything is energy. Absolutely everything is energy. Coalesced energy is what is manifested. It's coalesced energy through thought, through feeling, through emotion, through our soul. Everything is coalesced energy, and yes, it's that inner energy is beautiful, and we like beautiful things around us.
And energy is never static.
No,
so
never static. It's constantly moving.
You can rearrange it in any way that you choose, and
exactly.
Understanding that you do have the power to do that.
Yep.
So, Lavendar, would you like to make any final comments before we wrap it up?
Yes, energy doesn't lie.
No.
It can't. It cannot lie.
So we take responsibility for what we create and then change it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Carolyn, again, for writing this wonderful, wonderful book, I Dreamed I Was Human. And give us those websites again.
Okay, awakeningyou.com, YOU.com. And I Dreamed I Was Human.com. And people can Google my name too, and they can find me that way too. And yeah, you can find me a multitude of ways. Just
thanks to the internet, we love it.
Yeah.
So, well, Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us this evening, and it's been a real pleasure having you with us.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And we want to thank our listeners once again for tuning in, and thank you to Fiona and Anastasia and everyone here at Starseed Radio Academy, wishing you a great week. And remember, Mercury's going retrograde on the 6th, so buckle up. We will see you next week. Thanks so much, everyone. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.